Good morning, everybody. Today, I want to share a number of things with you. I'm going to start off nice and simple by telling you a parable. You'll find it in Matthew. Let me get the right one now, because I could lose it myself. Yes, Matthew 22. And basically, Jesus is telling a parable starting at verse 1. And he spoke to them a parable and said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who arranged a marriage for his son. He sent out his servants to call those who were invited to the wedding, but they were not willing to come. Again, he sent out other servants, telling those who were invited, 'See, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fatted cattle are killed, and all things are ready. Come to the wedding.' But they made light of it. And they went their way, one to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest seized his servants, treated them spitefully, and killed them. And when the king heard about it, he was furious. So he sent out his armies. He destroyed those murderers. He burnt up their cities. And then he said to his servants, 'The wedding is ready, but those who were invited are not worthy. Therefore go into the highways, and as many as you find, invite to the wedding.' So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, both good and bad, and the wedding hall was filled with guests." Today I want to talk to you about weddings. And I'll start off by telling you about a physical wedding that's going to happen. On the 19th of September, my daughter Charlene is going to marry Dominic Linford. So you can imagine in her how things are getting really excited. It's getting closer. It doesn't really seem that two Christmases ago he decided to propose to her. He did it in a small Santa grotto because I had been asked by the local cancer charity to sit in as Santa. And I was doing that, so he thought, as they were having the Narnia scene, you know, you walk in through the wardrobe, the snow's coming down and the trees and all the rest, and they had it lovely set out. He felt that this was the perfect place. So as they went in alone, by themselves, all of a sudden, the snow's coming down, he slipped on one knee, he held out the ring, and he says, "Would you marry me?" And it's all on camera. It was all caught. The whole thing is ruined for life. But not only was it caught, but it got published in all the papers, because the place, when they realized what was happening, decided, "This is publicity." And so they had it all over the whole front of the pages as well. And that's, what, nearly 2 years ago now. And now we're getting up to that point where the wedding's coming. And things are moving along. Weddings are times of joy. Weddings are times of reflection. We can feel a wee bit of loss. We're a bit nervous. We're a wee bit worried. But we here in the church have to be aware of the fact that we also are preparing for a wedding. And our wedding is coming very soon as well. Our wedding comes with the return of Jesus Christ. Friends, weddings don't go smooth. No matter how well you plan it, no matter what you've arranged in advance, something's going to go wrong. I think I've got your thing in my throat starting here. You must have left it here. I'll give it back to you. Things do go wrong. And because they go wrong, there's panic, there's worry, there's concern. Why did this happen? Why did this allow to go wrong? What's going on? This happened to Charlene. She had arranged for a nice wedding car, old type fashioned one, had got the driver sorted, booked him a year in advance, had everything sorted. Then we got a phone call. Sadly, the individual died. And there's nobody else there now to work with the car. The whole thing was pulled back. So she was in panic. What do I do? It's too close to the wedding. Where do I get a car? What we said to her, relax. God's already got you a car. Just wait till he shows it to you. Within 2 weeks, everything was fixed. No problem. Problem solved. Okay. Then she went to see her
florist.
Friend of the family, Caroline said. Had agreed. No problem. We can do all of this. Everything will be sorted. Went to finalize the details. Oh, I don't know what happened. I've double booked. I can't do your wedding. So, again, panic. What do we do? Where are we going to get florist? This close to the wedding. So we give her the same advice again. Don't worry, God's already got it sorted out. Everything is sorted out, you don't have to worry about it. No problems. That same day, she found a florist who just happened to have a space in her diary for that day, the day of the wedding. And what's more, this lady was not a relation, but she was able to offer her a higher quality of flowers at a lower price. Lower price. God works things out. So we're working through these things. We're working with these little problems. And we as a church also are preparing ourselves for our wedding, and sometimes we do things and we suddenly realize things aren't going the way we plan. And we panic. And we complain. And we say, nothing's going right. Why is we able to bring people all into the church? Why aren't we out there telling people all about Jesus Christ? Why aren't we? But we need to take a moment. It's not our job to panic. It's our job to let God prepare and give to us what he has prepared for us. See, he's in charge of every aspect of it. I'm on a wedding theme. About a fortnight ago, I was up here last, at the end of the schedule. I was just about to go on a week's holiday. I had basically decided this is the week that I paint the house on the outside in preparation for the wedding, and all the outhouses and everything else, big job. Problem was, the week leading up to it, it was raining. So I said, God, I've only got a week. I need good weather. I don't need it to be sunny, but I do need it to be dry. And because I'm going up some high ladders, no wind. So I got started. Very first day, dull as anything. I went out, looked at it, very dull, overcast. No blue sky, nothing, just deep dark clouds. And I said, perfect day for painting. I read the can, it says, in the unlikely event of rain, don't paint. If there is heavy moisture in the air, don't paint. So I goes, okay, no problem. So I started painting. That was all right. There was a little skift, small skift of rain. I looked and said, God, it's raining. It stopped. No problem. We got the first big bit of the bit done. Next day, we had a good weather, a bit windy, but it didn't go up any high ladders, so it was all right. So we got that sorted as well. Third day, I had to go to Belfast and get my teeth seen to. You know, when you're in wedding photographs, they say, you can't have gaps in your teeth. You have to go and get them fixed. So I had to go to Belfast, to my dentist. Now, the previous two times I went to my dentist, the first time they had cancelled, and the second time she had left the practice. So I was on a hiding to nothing here. And so as I was walking around the roads, I had been discussing this with God. I had been saying, look, here's the problem. I'm coming up to another dental appointment. If she's not there, how am I going to get these teeth fixed? And then I thought, you could always fix them. I mean, they're only teeth. I mean, you could simply heal me of these problems and fix them. But they didn't get any better. And then I noticed something as I was walking around. Every time my tongue touched this tooth, the pain rocketed straight up the side of my face. So I changed my prayer. I said, Father, I've got a problem. Here's my problem. It's a very simple problem. I'm going to the dentist, but I've got an infection in my teeth. They're going to do root canals. But because there's an infection in the teeth, they won't do the root canals. So I'm going to lose out here. Can something be done about that? Next thing I knew the next morning when I was heading off to the dentist, guess what? No pain in my teeth. Went, got both root canals done, no problem. Lost me day painting, but that was okay.
It bucketed down. The whole day, it rained.
So I wasn't worried about not painting. Then it came to the next day. Rain didn't want to go away. I says, Father, I've got to get this done. I've got to keep working at it. So I went out. I start spraying. As I was doing. It's pouring rain. And I'm busy arguing with God. I said, look, this paint says that you cannot put this on the wet. This paint says that you need it to be dry. This paint says... I'm going on like this and I'm spraying away. And then I went away to fill up the thing again so I could get more paint to start again. And as it did, I must have stopped talking for a moment. Because God spoke. He said a very simple thing. He spoke directly, a thought straight into my head. He says, go and look at the paint you've just done. Now it's pouring rain. And it's raining on the wall I'm painting. So that you still understand what I mean here. So I went and I looked at the paint. Perfect. Better than the ones the other day. Perfect. This is a water-based paint. You understand what I mean? Rain doesn't like it. It washes it off, runs it down, it thins it out. But nothing wrong with it. And then God simply said, I don't need to stop it to rain to make it work. I can do it without that. But you need to learn that. You need to learn that I can work with you to achieve the things that you need to do even when all the physical evidence around you is standing opposite to you. Do you see what I'm telling you? See what I've learned over the last couple of weeks. Even though all the evidence told me that I shouldn't have painted, even though all the evidence told me that it would be a waste of time, because God said I could do it, it succeeded even in the rain. That's the type of God we have. He's able not only to answer our prayers, but he teaches us as he does it, every day, every way. It's amazing. So you see, we're preparing for a wedding in the physical, but we're also preparing this wedding in the spiritual. And for the rest of this, I want to talk to you about our spiritual wedding. You don't have to be too intelligent, I don't think, to figure out today that we're in trouble worldwide. There's problems. Financially, countries are beginning to collapse. Wars are breaking out. Pollution is at heights. We have earthquakes. We have major storms. They're talking about global warming. Not that we get it in Ireland, but that's beside the point. The whole aspect of the thing is the world's in problems. Years ago, we used to put out a magazine called The Plain Truth, and it spent its time prophesying these events. Do you know that we don't need that magazine anymore? Because you don't need a magazine to tell you what's happening in the local newspapers. You can just go to the newspapers. It's now news. Everything they said happened, was going to happen, is happening. Now, a different requirement is required from the church. You're no longer asked to be a prophetic witness of events yet to come. You're now asked to be the sure comfort and hope of a new era that's coming in. You as a church, you as a people, have to be able and willing to work with the people who have no hope out there. When they're despairing, when they're losing out, when they don't know what direction to go, you can say to them, don't worry, God has it all worked out in advance. We know exactly what's going to happen. Before the problems fully happen, he has it solved. When the darkest hour has come, he has already brought the light. And then you'll tell them about this wedding that you're going to attend. This wonderful wedding when Jesus Christ returns that you're going to be part of. And you might even tell them a wee bit about Matthew 25 is the one I want to go to now, which is the parable of the 10 virgins. They also were going to a wedding. You'll find it, 25 verse 1. And we're told that five of them were wise and five of them were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps, but didn't bother any oil. Those who were wise took oil in their lamps. But while they waited, the bridegroom delayed, and they all fell asleep. They all went asleep. But then at the last hour, at midnight, the cry goes out. Prepare yourselves to go and meet him. Get ready. Because you need to go and prepare and get ready because he's coming, or you'll miss the wedding. So they all wake up. Every single one of them wake up, without exception. And they all go to their lamps to check, you know, how they're doing. And the wise realize, oops, lamps are a wee bit low. We need to add a bit of oil. So they get their wee vessels and they fill up the oil. And the foolish go and say, oops, forgot to bring extra oil. Won't have enough oil to keep going here. Need a wee bit. You guys give us some. Can't. We've only got enough for ourselves. We've only got enough. Have you ever wondered what that meant? I mean, have you ever considered where that stands in the churches today? All slept. That meant that basically, you know, when you sleep, you don't do a lot. You don't learn a lot. You don't engage with anyone. You're basically resting. You're on the revibrating aspect, you know, you're bringing yourself back. But then when the shout came, all woke. All churches, all Christian churches in the world, when this shout that Jesus Christ is returning comes, and it'll be loud, it'll be powerful, there will be not a Christian in the land that won't accept the fact that this is the shout. Then you're going to see a difference. Everybody wakes up and everyone starts scuttling about, looking, how do we prepare for this wedding? How do we get ourselves ready for his coming? And they're going to discover a fault, a problem. And it's to do with this oil. Now I want to tell you, this oil is a very simple thing. Because your oil is your belief, your reliance on Jesus Christ. Your belief and your reliance. And that's the problem. Some of us who are Christians have a tendency to put more sway on what we are able to do by our own means rather than turning and considering that he has given us provision for everything. And this isn't going to just happen here. This is going to be for all the churches. They're all going to hit the same problem. There will be individual Christians who have been very powerful, very strong, very sure of their faith. All the rest, suddenly they're quaking in their shoes because they realize they don't have the ability to do this. They're going to have to rely wholly on him. They're going to have to be able to take the assurance that his sacrifice was all that was required. Nothing else. That's something that's hard. No, we're people. We have a difficulty with this. We find it very strange. That's why we turned to that very first parable. If you remember in verse 22, the kingdom of heaven is like. Those who were first called to the feast were instructed and taught all about God. They were given rules and regulations and understanding. They had been called as a specific people, supernaturally brought about, protected, guided. Their only means of survival in the land they were was with God. And every time they forgot that, they lost out. Until they repented and came back and relied on God who brought them back. Every time. But when Jesus is talking here to them, he reminds them that because ultimately they still don't believe him. They don't believe that God has to be their salvation. That God has to pay this for them himself, because there is nothing they can do to sort it out. Because they don't believe that, they reject it. They say, well, no, we'll handle it ourselves. We'll sort ourselves out. We'll obey. We'll do what we need to do. But they can't. But the sad point is, the second bunch, who are now invited to the wedding, who hadn't originally been invited, who come from every quarter of every highway of all over the place, have been invited to the wedding, are able to accept it because they know we can't do this by ourselves, but because we have been given it as a gift, we can accept it. But as we have reached these last days, this applies now to that group. It applies to the church. If we rely on our strength, on our wisdom and our understanding, we're going to lose out. Because our own righteousness is filthy rags. Now, would you see a wedding going up the aisle in filthy rags? You wouldn't. You know that all weddings have a very simple rule. The bride has got to outshine everybody else. And if by chance she doesn't, you hide that person somewhere else so no pictures come of it. That's how it works. You dress the bride in finery. She goes, hours ahead just to get herself sorted out. You know, the groom's waiting at the church. Everybody says there's an expectation. Tongue-tied today. There is an expectation for the groom to have to wait a wee while. You know, for the bride to more or less say, well, am I coming, am I not coming? The real reason is, it takes her so long to get ready. She's lucky to get to the church that day at all. She needs to start a week ahead. Yet here you are, the church, along with all the rest of the body of Christ worldwide. The whole lot of you. And you're all a singular bride. And you're preparing for a wedding. And the righteousness, which is your white garment, your beauty, your clothes, your outfit, isn't your own. Because yours, unfortunately, isn't good enough. It's been supplied. It's been given to you. It's a gift from God. But if you're not willing to grasp that righteousness and dress yourself in it fully, that is, rely completely and totally on the sacrificial sacrifice of Jesus Christ. I mean, what was given for us? If you're not willing to say, this is it, this is all I need, then you've no starter point. If you're not willing to rely totally on every word that Jesus said, then you're not starting a marriage well. In fact, you're not starting the marriage at all, because unless you're in agreement, unless you're in total agreement with Jesus Christ, you won't be part of the bride. And that's the shock that's going to be out there. That's the five foolish virgins. You see, they thought they were fine. They had enough. They didn't have to rely on anything. But they didn't take into consideration they needed the extra. They needed what God was offering them, symbolized by the Lamb. Their simple faith in Christ. So they had to go out. They had to search. They had to look. But they were too late. They couldn't get in. The door was locked. Weddings are like that. Very important that we understand that. Very important that we come to terms with how those work. In Psalm 37 verse 3, we have a simple, direct quote. Trust in the Lord. That's it. That's all you have to do. Trust him. In Luke 6, verse 24, Jesus challenges some of the people who were calling him Lord, Lord. And as you are probably aware, in the Bible, a husband also is called Lord. So if a wife was getting married, she would call her husband Lord, because he is over her. She has given him reverence. She's accepting his authority. Though she's equal with him, she accepts his authority. But Jesus says here, you call me Lord, and do not do the things that I say. Because that's important. If we are his bride, and I know that we all are here, if we're his bride, and we intend to remain being his bride, then it's fundamentally important that we obey him, that we listen to what he says in the scripture, that we don't try to change it, adjust it, or make it suit different beliefs. We've got to believe what it says. And what it says is very plain. You were dead, but through Christ, you're now alive. You were lost, but through Christ, you're now found. You have been made acceptable. You were lamp lit. But you are not intended to be hidden. You are to reflect and allow yourselves to be seen by everyone who meets you, that they can see the glory of the bride. Can you imagine a wedding where nobody comes to see the bride in the physical? I know it will bear away. Every wedding that happens, whether it's church, chapel, or anywhere else, they're out of their offices, they're way up the street so that they can catch a glimpse of what the bride looks like. They want to see her getting out of the car. They want to see her going into the church or the chapel. They want to see her. They want to see her. They're not invited to the wedding. They just want to see her. They want to look and see what she was dressed like. And when they come back, it's always the same. She was beautiful. She was lovely. That dress was gorgeous. It was marvelous. It was such... And they're full of praise. You, the bride, being prepared now for the coming of Christ, also were dressed in finery, in beauty, in wonder, for the full righteousness of Christ is with you. And as you listen to him, and as you obey him, and as you do the things that he asks of you, you become even more beautiful, more appealing. The world has to see you. It has to recognize you. Because you're the bride. You're the gift, the final witness God is giving to the world. His bride being chosen from among her. She goes into problems. She will suffer difficulties, the world. She's going to be faced with destruction and war and the wrath of God poured upon her. Remember what it said? The servants were beaten, spitefully used, so the king got angry and he made war and destroyed all those who fought against him. That happens too. But it's not to you. You're the witness. You're the ones who are going to the wedding. You're the ones who are special to God. So how did you get this way? How did you become special to God? Wasn't anything you did. Truth of the matter is, before Adam was created, God already had recorded your names in his book of life. He had chosen you to be part of his church. He had given you the potential of learning, growing, and maturing. And when the right time came, he opened the opportunity for you to say yes. And just like Dominic when he was asking Charlie, he picked his moment. He looked for the best time when he was going to get a positive response. And God did the same for you. Every single one of you here were called at the optional time. The time when there was more than less chance, if you know what I mean, more than less, that you would say yes. And you did. Sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we go out into the world and we're telling people about God and we're forgetting God hasn't called this person yet. He hasn't prepared them for coming. So we're filling them with information, but we're annoyed because they can't accept it. But you see, we shouldn't be. All we're to do is let them see us. Let them know about us. Let them know what we believe. Let them know what we understand. It's God who decides who comes into it and who doesn't. God does that. He's the one in charge of that particular aspect of it. He knows when best to call the bride. He knows when she'll say yes. And that's a wonderful thing that we need to do. But how did you get here? We know that you were called. We know that you accepted. But the problem was, you have to have someone to marry. How do you get a groom? Well, we were told again in the parable of the king as he prepared for his feast that the feast was being prepared for his son because he had arranged a wedding. You see, he had arranged the wedding for his son, so his son already existed. His son was there from the beginning. Jesus said something to us that sometimes we forget. He told us that we never knew the Father prior to his coming. We didn't know God. We didn't know what he looked like. We'd never seen his form. We'd never heard his voice. We didn't even know there was a Father. This shocked the Jews because they were sure they had been worshipping God for the last 1,500 years. They were basically very sure on that. But he said, no, you weren't. Because you never knew him. He was hidden from you. But who were they worshipping? Who were the Jews? Who did Abraham get called by? Who worked with Noah? Who formed Adam from the dust of the earth and formed him and breathed life into him? Well, in John 1, verse 1, we are told very simply who it is. You can turn to that, John 1, 1. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He in the beginning was with God, and all things were made through him, and without him nothing was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. The Word, who became Jesus Christ, was the one who formed Adam, was the one who formed the earth, was the one who put Noah in the ark, was the one who called Abraham and appeared to him and walked with him and talked with him, is the one who called Moses in the bush, is the one that did all those miracles with all those prophets. It's the one that gives the double measure of Elijah to Elisha. That God, that one, is Jesus Christ. And he's the one that asks us to believe him. He's the one who says to us, my words are true and right and bring life. He's the one who says, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he be dead, yet shall he live. Our relationship with Jesus is the most important thing we have in life. Without it, we have no hope. Without it, we have no access to our Father. Previously, we didn't even know the Father existed. We had been working with Jesus, unaware that there was someone else. But the reality was that through Jesus, and because of the relationship that was being agreed, we learn about the Father. And that also is a wonderful gift. You see, years ago, when I would attend different denominations, the preachers would tell us about the God of the Old Testament and how he would take no prisoners, so to speak. He was a fiery God, an angry God,
A God who decided what you would do, and if you didn't do it, you got a slap in the ear and you got told off and head off. No mistakes, no leeway. And then they would tell us about this new God, Jesus. And he was such a totally different character. He was love, kind, compassion. You could twist them around your little finger. That's how they presented him. You had a God who was hard, or you had a God who you could talk to and relate to and done all this for you because he was so loving and kind and caring. But they never tied the two together. They never realized that they were the one. The true God of love is the Father. For he loved us enough to give us his Son. He loved us enough that when we had died and were left useless to him, void, because we no longer had spiritual life in us, didn't give up on us, didn't just say, enough and let's restart. He says, no, I will make the ultimate sacrifice. I will send my Son, that through him they might have life. And that's what he did. So when Jesus came and starts telling us about the Father, we learn that the Father is filled with life. He's filled with love. He wants us to succeed. He wants to share with us what he originally intended. Jesus Christ sits now at the right hand of the Father, where he has been for 2,000 years. He's waiting anxiously to come back. He wants his bride. He wants to take you to himself. He wants to make you whole. He is second only to God. And you are to be his wife, equal to him, inheriting as he inherits all things. You've been raised from nothing to the pinnacle of everything. You have been taken and made holy through him. And the best part of it, you've inherited a Father. A Father that has existed but you didn't know about. A Father who loves you, cares for you, and has put provision for you throughout all your physical life and all of eternity. You're coming into a new family. A family where you will have no tears, no worries, no sadness, no crying. Joy will fill you, and you will be forever. No more sickness, no more tiredness, no more age. Oneness with Christ. Sharing in a perfect relationship with God. Family relationship. But before that, he asks one thing. Let the world see you as the bride. Let them see you in your full glory. Because after this, they'll not be able to look at you. You'll be so bright.